Faith or folly, Kabbalah, mysterious or dangerous. Tonight's topic, Mazonos. Tonight's topic is about Kabbalah. You see this picture, I don't really know what it is, but I thought it depicts kind of our feeling of when we see the words Kabbalah. The very words invoke mystery, uncertainty. This doesn't look like it has anything to do with Judaism, but that's how we feel oftentimes when we hear about Kabbalah, that we learn this from Kabbalah, and we do this because of Kabbalah, and we don't know what it is. We know that Madonna learned Kabbalah, and I don't know. We don't know so much about what the Kabbalah Center does, but they do some stuff, and we don't really know what it is. And I wanted to discuss tonight the basic part of Torah, which Kabbalah is part of our Torah, and talk about how, from a halakhic perspective, how it works, and the Zohar and the authenticity of the Zohar, and questions related to balancing Psak and Kabbalah. In an article written in the Dialogue Journal by Rabbi Zev Krinis, he writes that the very word Kabbalah, as we said before, invokes mystery and uncertainty, while the word halacha invokes rationality and clarity. Yet, in a triumph of Torah scholarship, our great rabbis have successfully integrated these seemingly incongruent disciplines into a coherent system of halachic practice. There's a lot of questions which revolve around the Zohar, Kabbalah. It's the prime text that when we talk about Kabbalah is the Zohar. Where did the Zohar, where did it come from? It was 16th century. So, the Zohar was revealed in the times of Rav Moshe de Leon, I think in the 12th century, or 13th century, and you could Google that if you would like, the end of the 13th century, and it is attributed to Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. So there are many questions, you know, why did it only become discovered in the 13th century? If Rav Moshe de Leon, who is the one who reveals it, if he's telling us that it harkens back to a tradition from Talmudic times, or Shimon Bar Yochai, and Tana, from the Mishnaic times, so why did it only get revealed later? And people question it. People say that it's just a forgery. It was written by this Moshe de Leon. We don't know so much about him. He's a mysterious figure. So, where does this claim that it comes from Moshe Bar Yochai, Shimon Bar Yochai, one of the great Tanam, the great Tzaddikin, where does this come from? So, I merited to have a meeting with three other of my friends, with Rav Aaron Lopiansky, Shlita. He's a big Talmud Chacham, and he's a Rebbe of mine, and we met with him, and one of the questions that we discussed was this question, of the questions revolving the Zohar, the authenticity of it, is it really from Rav Shimon Bar Yochai? And I want to tell you some of the approach, I want to share with you the approach that he gave, and then we'll talk about some of the sources and some of the questions revolving the Zohar. So he started off with a very practical discussion. Let's start with the facts on the ground. What facts do we start off with on the ground? Number one, we have a sefer, a book that's called the Zohar. It's a very difficult book, very difficult sefer to make any sense of. And there's a lot of different things put together almost seemingly at a random order. Number two, we also have a tradition in Judaism that there's a hidden Torah Sasod, a secret Torah that doesn't fit into the general structure that we have within Shas, within Halacha, within Mishnayos. There's a Gemara that talks about Rabbi Akiva and others entering into the Paradise, entering into this orchard and this difficult type of understanding that not everyone was able to merit to understand. We have certain mentions of this idea, this teaching that doesn't seem to fit the categories that we know of other types of learning. Number three, the Gra, the Vilna Gaon, which we're going to talk about at length, and his approach to Kabbalah, the arguably one of the greatest Torah scholars of the past 400 years. He accepted the Zohar, he edited it, he went through many parts of it. He was a very critical reader, but all in all, he accepted it, and Klal Yisrael, mainstream Judaism, followed his acceptance of the Zohar. Unquestionably, Rav Aaron Lopiansky said, number four, unquestionably there were parts that were added later. You can see it references things that were only written at a later time. It seems to be a hodgepodge of different parts. It seems that there are parts that were added in, and that we know. And number five, Rav Moshe De Leon's actual other svarim, other books that he wrote. It's not on the source sheet here. I'm just telling you what Rav Aaron Lopiansky said. He said that the other svarim that he wrote, I didn't know this. I didn't study his other books. But the other books that he wrote have no bearing, no similarity in any way, shape, or form to the act of the Zohar. They don't seem like the same style. They don't read the same way. His other books were much more technical, much smaller. The Zohar is a massive, voluminous work. It's poetic, and it would be very strange. Number one, it would be basically impossible for him to have done this himself. It doesn't seem to fit his personality. And number two, if you wanted to write a book that would be a bestseller, don't write such a difficult book. You don't have to write a massive work. And, you know, it doesn't seem to make any sense that he would forge it. The bottom line is that we accept the Zohar as a holy book, that it contains within it the teachings of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, and there are many different things that perhaps were added in later. I don't know if you've been in classes or heard different debates about certain people questioning where all this Kabbalah stuff comes from. Some of you have?
The Rambam. They don't like much Kabbalah.
Right, so they say the Rambam questioned that he didn't have it. So the Rambam comes before the Zohar is revealed. So it's not so difficult. He comes pre-Kabbalah. Kabbalistic works before the Zohar, but the revelation of the Zohar opened up the whole idea of Kabbalah. So it is true the Rambam doesn't have the same Kabbalah that we have. I don't think it's such a difficult thing to overcome. But there are people who question it. There are professors, there are academics, there are people who question why Klal Yisrael has accepted the Zohar, why the Jewish people have accepted it. So Rav Aaron Lopiansky said, and I think this is a very nice way of putting it. He said that, he doesn't need my haskama, but I think it's very clear. There are generally, people who generally accept the Zohar are generally Erlich, good Jews. They're genuine, and maybe they're accepting a work which has some corruptions in it. But the people who question it, the people who try to undermine the general consensus are generally not people in that regard. And he gave an example. He said that historically, we know that there was a big debate when the Enlightenment happened in Europe, right? We have the Haskalah, the walls of the ghetto were broken down, and there were two approaches, really, to how we accepted this more an enlightened movement within Judaism. My father-in-law, this is Rabbi Balk, he's coming to visit to hear the shir. He just got in from Cincinnati. So, any hot dogs left? We'll give this man a hot dog. And do you want a soda? You want some soda? So Rav Lopiansky gave a mashal that there were two general approaches to the Haskalah, to the Enlightenment, and how much we accept this kind of a modern approach to Judaism. Those who followed the Chassam Sofer, and he himself, the Chassam Sofer took a... he did not approve of what the Hasidim were doing. They were changing the Nesach HaTefillah. They changed what the general liturgy was. They introduced the Nesach Ari, which again comes a lot from Kabbalah. He didn't approve of that. At the same time, he didn't approve of what the Maskilim were doing. The enlightened Jews were changing. They wanted to introduce music into the shul. So he took more of a hard approach, but he said, "You know what? I'm going to side with the Hasidim over the maskilim, even though I'm not exactly happy with everything they're doing, but I put my hat in their camp. Whereas the Noda B'Yehuda and others of his students in Prague, they took a little bit of a lighter approach. They accepted Rav Rappaport, who had certain, you know, propensities towards Haskalah, and they took a more easier or lighter approach towards the Maskilim. But when it came to the Hasidim, they said, no, we are not compromising on what they're changing, and we are not accepting them. Historically, there's nothing left of the Czech Jewish community after the Noda B'Yehuda died, quickly after the entire community was lost, much in assimilation. And when it comes to the students of the Chasam Sofer and the Hasidim in general, there was a continuity of Judaism. So historically, Rav Lapiansky said, those who question the authenticity of the Zohar, those who try to undermine the consensus, even though there may have been things added to the Zohar afterwards, which there may have been corruptions, but he said, personally, I think historically, we see that those who try to question really undermine the continuity of Judaism, and those who accepted the Zohar, accepted this tradition, this mystical tradition, really supported and brought about a perpetuation of Judaism. So that's just an interesting thing to recognize, even though, as we will see, there have been those who question the authenticity. Yes, Shai.
Is he saying that everyone who's accepted the Zohar has universally been good towards Judaism?
No, he's just saying that you can notice a trend. You can notice a trend, and he'd rather be on the side of those who are supportive, and you know, who are not trying to debunk the general consensus, because of historically we've seen that those who do undermine and do not generally have a continuity of Judaism. That's what he's saying. It's a trend. It's not always true. Rav Kapach, who is certainly a huge Talmud Chacham, and he came from a Taimani tradition, and they didn't have the Zohar for many, many, many years. And he was a student of the Rambam, Hamam, I don't know what I say probably, but there have been those that have challenged it. But overall, generally speaking, the consensus has been to accept it. I'm giving a historical trend, which I'm getting from Rav Lapiansky. Okay. The halachic process. How does Kabbalah fit into the halachic process? So this again is from Rabbi Zev Kranis. Normally, one traces a halachic decision from its scriptural roots through its primary Mishnaic and Talmudic sources, and finally through to the halachic codes of the Rishonim and the Achronim. In contrast, the Zohar and other associated Kabbalistic works were only revealed in the end of the 13th century. As such, poskim, halachic deciders, were confronted with the challenge of managing a back-to-front integration of novel and potential conflicting teachings into a carefully developed, mature, and authoritative halachic system. In other words, we have this whole halachic work, this whole halachic system. We work from scriptural roots, moving down towards the oral tradition, and it's all been developed. It's all been formally accepted and developed. And then all of a sudden, boom! 13th century, Moshe de Leon, the Zohar is revealed. So even if we accept it, how do we work that into a system which has already been developed and, so to speak, codified? So let's begin with the first source, the Rambam in his Akdama to Mishneh Torah. The Rambam expresses this idea of the finality and the systematic approach to halacha. He writes, V'dvar malalu bedinim gezeros utakonos minhagos, these principles, the judgments, decrees, and ordinances and customs, shenischadshu achar chibur ha-gemara, these are the customs, and he delineates the different types of things that came after the sealing of the Talmud. He says those are things that happened afterwards. Aval kol advarim shebigemara abavli, anything that appears in the Talmud, the Babylonian Talmud. Kol Yisrael Chayavin Aleches Bam. Every Jewish person, the entire Jewish nation, they're obligated to follow in its path. V'kofin kol ir v'ir v'chol medina linog b'chol minhagos shenagu chachmei gemara, and we force all cities and all provinces to abide by those customs that were accepted by the scholars of the Talmud. The Ligzar Gezerosam, and who pass decrees, the Lalechas B'Tikunosam, and we must follow these decrees and walk in those ways. In other words, the Jewish people need to observe those ordinances. And this is the key line that I want to show you. Hoel v'chol osam ha-devarim shebigemara, hiskimo aleim kol Yisrael. All the Jewish people accepted what was said, what was written in the Gemara. Anything that's in the Talmud Bavli was accepted by the entire Jewish people. So, what happens when we have this new text introduced that the Jewish people did not accept on the books, right? We might have this, as we said, we have references to Pardes and different references into Chazal, talking about the secret knowledge and the secret study, maybe referring to Kabbalah, perhaps. But we don't have any formalized acceptance of the Jewish people of this work. So what do we do with it? We know it exists. We know that there's some sort of study that is not revealed until the 13th century. What do we do with it? It doesn't fit the description that the Rambam is giving us as to the general corpus of what the Jewish people accepted. So Rabbi Krainis says the Zohar must fit directly into this system. And the fact that we're attributing the Zohar to Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, which is the claim, means that it must fit into this system of halacha. So let's begin with some of the challenges to the Zohar, and then we're going to get to how the poskim deal with accepting the Zohar. So source number two, the Tshuva Me'ava. This is a Talmud of the Noda Behuda, which you mentioned earlier. His name was Rebbe Lazar ben David Fleckless. I think I'm pronouncing it correct. He was born in Prague in 1754. And he was one of the main challengers of the Zohar. He writes some very extreme words about it. He says no one could believe this who has a brain in their head, that it comes from Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. He says that why isn't it mentioned anywhere in Shas? Why did Rav Yehuda Anasi not talk about it if Rav Shimon Bar Yochai is a Tana? Why did Rav Yehuda Anasi who codified the Mishnah, why didn't it appear? I'm just going through it pretty quickly because of the time. He says, I'm reading the bolded underlying words. He says, "V'ein ani chalila matel dofi v'pugam b'kvod atana of the Reb Shimon Bar Yochai. Chas v'shalom, God forbid, am I trying to challenge the honor of Reb Shimon Bar Yochai?" He says, "No, I would never do such a thing. Rather, all I'm doing is saying that I'm just saying this can't be." He says, "Mi sheyesh lo chatzi das, anyone who has half a brain, Yaga Cain should say that this is not from Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. Shehare, how does he know? Nizkru b'zivra zohar kama tanoim v'amuroim she'achar Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. How could Rav Shimon Bar Yochai make reference to tanoim and people who lived after his time? Shonim rabos, many years b'mispar. Doesn't make any sense. How could we say this is the Rav Shimon Bar Yochai? And there are others. Rav Yaakov Emdin was a critical reader of the Zohar and said many parts perhaps were not from him. With that said, we said before, Klal Yisrael, the Gra, the Vilna Gaon, everyone has accepted the Zohar as a holy sefer. The fact that things came after, one second, Menachem, the fact that there were things that were written afterwards, Rav Lapiansky said, that's true. That could be, but it doesn't mean that the entire work is a corruption. And mainstream Judaism has accepted it as a holy book. And I want to now deal with some of the ways that the poskim, the halachic authorities, how they dealt with the Zohar, and what they write about how you should study it, who should study it, what it is. Yes, Menachem.
Isn't it true that he wrote a siddur, or did he write the siddur?
He wrote a siddur, yeah. He wrote a siddur. What connection? You just stop. You're just saying. Yeah, he wrote a siddur, yeah.
Sorry, off topic.
Yeah. Okay. By the way, the Arizal himself, a major Kabbalist, wrote that one finds many contradictions, many difficulties in the Zohar, and without proper grasp of the foundational ideas, you can find this work to be very confusing, and therefore he suggests that one not try to study the Zohar without those foundational ideas. Okay.
Foundational ideas it doesn't explain what those foundational ideas are.
Yeah, it doesn't explain, yeah.
Zohar or Kabbalah the same thing, by the way?
Is Zohar is one of the primary texts of what we're going to referring to as the mystical teachings of Kabbalah, yes. There are other works, the Bahir, the Sefer Yetzirah. Sorry?
Zohar and Kabbalah the same thing or different?
Zohar is a book of the Kabbalah, just like I would say Gemara is Torah. You know, there's Torah is other, also Chumash and also Mishnah.
Okay.
Zohar is one of the books of the Kabbalah.
Okay. It's also considered Torah, studying Torah, if you study Kabbalah, right?
Yes, yes. As we said, it's one of the parts of our Torah. It's a holy sefer, and there were those that challenged it, but the general consensus has been to accept it as the Torah Sasod that Chazal referred to, the Pardes that Rabbi Akiva went into. And the Zohar is a expression of that knowledge. So how did the poskim deal with it? So the Shulchan Aruch in source number 3 in Yoredeya Hilchos Talmud Torah Siman Resh Mem Vav, the Shulchan Aruch and the Rama talks about the halachos of Torah study, and the Rama writes that one should not study shar chachmos, other wisdom. What does that mean? He doesn't say what that is. He says, "Mikol makom, lilmo ba'akrai." You can learn them, at a temporary way, in a not permanent way. B'shar chachmos. And then he writes over here, "Bulvaj lo yu sifre minim." You can't study heresy. V'zeo nikra bina chachamim tiel bepardes. This is what it means that the our sages referred to this walk, this venture into the orchard. I'll get more into what this is. Okay. The aim of Adam Matala Paradis, one should not enter into the orchard. The orchard, we'll see what that is. Rak la'acher shemale kreso baser v'yayin. This is a quotation of the Rambam in Yisori HaTorah. You need to fill your stomach b'baser v'yayin, with wine and with meat and wine. V'hu leida isur v'heter. One should know this. What does it mean, wine, meat and wine? It means you should know the Isser v'heter v'dinei mitzvos. You should know basic halacha. You should know what's mutter, what's aser, and you should know the mitzvos. On that phrase in the Ramah, the Shach, one of the major commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch in Yoredeya, the Shach writes, what does this mean? So he says that Shar Chachmos are philosophy and other types of, he writes over here, Chachmas HaKabbalah. Chachmas HaKabbalah. So the way the Shach is interpreting the Ramah is saying that before you learn Kabbalah, again, you see the Ramah in Shulchan Aruch on the page. Again, accepting that there is a wisdom, there is a form of Torah called Kabbalah, that one should not study it until one has mastered the general understanding of what's mutter and what's aser. Doesn't explain so much what that is. Right? What does that mean? I try to be a good Jew. You know, I know what's forbidden, what's permitted. What does that mean? But we'll get more into the details of that soon. And one to know dine mitzvos. Yes, Zev. Medrash is, yeah, I don't think that's what we mean. Meaning there are Midrashim that appear in the Zohar and they seem similar. It's a good question. Right. There are agados that are like that. So it's a good question. How do you discern what's considered Kabbalah? If it's just weird, is that Kabbalah? No, seemingly not. Seemingly that would be in the category. You know, Pardes is known to stand for 4 levels of learning Torah. Pardes is an acronym for exactly Pshat, simple understanding, Remez, which is hints, Gematria, other things like that, Drash, homiletic exegesis, and then Sod. So we're now referring to, it's a very good question, Zev, how do you determine what the difference between Sod and Drash is? But we're now dealing with Sod, the secrets. So that's what the Shach says. And this makes its way into the Shulchan Aruch. So it's not some, you know, some wacky source like this picture about like the moon and the stars and this eye. It's the Shulchan Aruch, the Shach, says that you need to first know the halachos before studying Kabbalah. Now, see what he says over here. What does he mean to fill your stomach with wine, with meat and wine? He says, he writes, V'chein ha-mekubalim, the last parts in source number 4, V'chein ha-mekubalim, the Kabbalists, B'shar ha-achronim, and other later authorities, Sefligu b'davar, they split on this matter, Shelo l'mod chachmas ha-kabbalah ad-acher, Shemalei kreso mi-hashas, See how he defines filling your stomach? From learning Gemara. V'yeishakas, there are those that said, I mean, there was a debate at what does it mean to fill your stomach. There were those that said, Shelo lilmod Kabbalah ad Shiyehem ben arba'im shani. You should not study Kabbalah until you're 40 years old. I thought that was a heebie-jeebie, whatever. I didn't know where that came from. It's the Shach. The Shach, one of the major authorities right over here. Major authorities in Halacha.
Isn't it 40 with kids? Or is that something?
Yeah, he just says here, 40 years old. 40 years old.
Who's the Shach?
The Shach was, he's a major posek who lived in Poland. He's buried in, I was at his kever, he's buried in Krakow, in the Ramah, in the kever of the Ramah. He was the Gadol Ador, a Talmud of the Rebbe Reb Heschel, that was his Rebbe. He was very young when he came out with his critique on the Taz, the Nekudas HaKesef, and he was known as one of the great authorities in Eastern Europe. In about the, I would say the 18th, 17th century, I have to look. Exactly when.
Is this assuming this person had been learning up until the age of 40?
It's a good question. That's a good question. Like, it sounds like that, because he says, Kimashikos of Ben Arbaim Labina, that a person who's 40 years old has a greater understanding of Torah. But it's an interesting question. Jason's asking, does it mean just I turn 40, boom, I have life experience, I know. It seems like it indicates a person who's studying until the age of 40. So if you get a late start, maybe you would be older. It's a good point. It's a good point. And he says you also need to have holiness, purity, zvizis, nikias, alacrity, and he says that many people rove amispartzim la'alos pachachmazu kodem azman. So many people try to, you know, enter this chachm before their time, hazman aroy, before the proper time. He says it's really not a proper thing. It is not a good thing. Now, there is something known as the Decree of the Councils of the Four Lands in Lublin, in Poland, in 1756. They all got together. There were many times that they got together to decide certain things that the entire community would follow. I think it was called the Knesset Arba Arches Abris or something like that. It was a time in Poland where Jews had their own... could internally decide certain things. It was a kind of the golden age where they didn't have a government deciding for them what they could do. They had this time where they would, all the lands would gather in Lublin in the center, and they would have Eastern Europe, people from Eastern Europe, from Western, they all come together, and there are those that say that this Shach is referring to what they decided there in this Knesa, in this gathering in 1756, that only one who studies all of Torah up until the age of 40 should be studying studying Kabbalah. Yes.
How was Rashi able to learn? His Rebbe was Rabbi Akiva, who didn't even start learning until he was 40 and then died at
120 he died.
120?
I don't know how long he lived, but the assumption is that he was studying and he was able to reach the level. Again, it doesn't say that no one's allowed to. It just says you need to have a certain amount of understanding. So again, I don't know how old he was when he died, but assuming he had the right amount of understanding, he was able to teach it. But you know, I think this is just a general rule. But
the Arizal died. Yeah, the Arizal was 39.
Yes, yes. The Ramchal was studying Kabbalah in Italy. He was a clean shaven Kabbalist, 20 years old, and people wrote him out of town. They said, "What are you doing? This is crazy. You can't be studying Kabbalah." And people get very nervous. What?
He had a malachim.
Yeah, I mean, we know that there are people like the Arizal and many others that did study before, and I don't think that it means that you cannot. But this is a general rule, and obviously there have been exceptions in our tradition.
And it's just like a lot of the other types of Torah. You start with Chumash. And with Chumash, that makes it so that you can understand that Mishnah can seem a little bit more open to understandable.
Correct.
Then
correct.
Then the Gemara, and there, then by understanding all those different things and understanding that well, then a lot of the Kabbalah will make a lot more sense. Where it's like how Madonna's probably learning it is like, oh, this is interesting, but she's not really understanding because she doesn't have the
basics. I should have said that the Kabbalah Center, it goes without saying, I assume that most of the people there are not learning Shas and Poskim even some of their day. So yes, according to just taking the words of the Poskim and the people who talk about Kabbalah. The Arizal says you can't study without understanding it. The Shachir, the Ramah, seemingly alluding to it. You know, it's a really deep study, and it takes someone who knows a lot of Torah to really appreciate it. Yes, Menachem.
What's the concern here that they're putting all like limitations, but like it doesn't seem to,
right?
Like,
so I'm not a Makubal. Like,
what's the worst thing?
Right. What's the worst thing you can happen? Right.
Like,
right.
If you're just some random guy like Kabbalah, no one's gonna listen to you anyway. So it's like, if you're, what are you gonna do to go after?
Right. Right. You're saying if you're a fraud, you're a fraud. Like, who cares? I hear. Shai is pointing out Shabtai Tzvi, which, you know, whatever you say, there's a whole. It's a whole nother shir. But whatever you say, we have had Kabbalists who have made a big stink and have not, you know, have, again, maybe he was a Talmud Chacham, I don't know. But there have been people who have corrupted and changed and, you know, the general Masorah, who have used the guise of Kabbalah and have gathered followers who have not been... have not been genuine and not been positive for our tradition. It's a whole other topic, but it's a good point. Like, what do you mean? Okay, I don't get it. So what's the problem? But when you deal with more, when you see historically, it was certainly something that they needed. They had a whole gathering about it. Like, it was something that really was hurting the community. When people start changing things, you know, if they start changing the Nusach HaTefillah, I mean, that's a very sensitive thing. It's a very sensitive thing. Right. So Hasidus is definitely influenced heavily by Kabbalah, and I don't think generally there was different approaches in different Hasidus, so you can't really say this lock, stock, and barrel. But most of the, I would say, influence of Kabbalah in Hasidus arose, gave rise to the fact that in Hasidic circles there is not such a hard. 40 years old, you know, no study of Kabbalah. It's much more accepting of the study of Kabbalah, if not, you know, pro, you know, people studying it younger. Tanya is a very deep Kabbalistic sefer, and people who, you know, they learn it every day as children. Again, I wanted to show you that Kabbalah makes its way into the poskim. And I wanted to share with you that the 40 years old thing is not something fake. It actually, you know, but there have been different views as to how to balance when and what and how to study it. There are people who, you know, would tell you, what do you mean? There's no problem learning Tanya when you're, you know, 22, you know. But I just wanted to show you the Shach, and, you know, I think it's important to question before doing too much. And if you have to ask your own Rav, your own leader, you know, what's appropriate for what you're doing. I mean, some of the things that we learned today, you know, would seem new and modern and not done in 1756. So you have to ask, ask for guidance when it comes to these things.
And there's certain places, like, I know, when I was younger, I found this Chabad kind of site that's connected, that Chabad.org connected to, and that, like, and it's connected to, if you know, Svad, Ascent of Svad.
Yes.
And they have, like...
Breslov.
That's Chabad.
Uh-huh.
So they have certain things in that, and, like, they try to teach certain things in Kabbalah that anyone can learn, not just...
Right.
Is there, and like, and make it in a way that will be understandable and that can help improve your understanding of Judaism.
Sure, yeah, there's definitely things that we can gain from. And
just make sure you're the
Ramban al Torah, which everybody learns, is working heavily from Kabbalistic sources, not just Kabbalistic sources. But I'm not saying you shouldn't study any of it. The question is, I just wanted to show you that there is this discussion and it makes its way into Shulchan Aruch, and you have to ask for guidance. In terms of, let's say we have a contradiction between halacha and Kabbalah. So let's discuss a little bit the halachic system. We only have 5 more minutes, so we're going to have to do it to part 2 tomorrow. The halachic system and how Kabbalah works, and how does it, you know, we do a lot of things because of Kabbalah. Like, we put on our right shoe first, and if you look at the Mishnah Berurah, and you see it says it's from Kabbalah. The nail cutting, a lot of things. I'm trying to think of something everybody does. So what did you say? So there are things that we do which, I don't know, are good things, and there are things that we do that are perhaps, you know... Like, I want to show you that it appears in halacha, but there's a system. It's not just like, you know, whatever we hear from Kabbalistic sources automatically trumps the halacha. So let's discuss. So Rav Yaakov Emden in Shelas Yaivitz, he writes that even if you consider the Zohar as attributed to Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, the other opinions in the Talmud are those of his fellow Tanaim. In other words, they're of equal standing, and are also, you know, should not be considered secondary. In other words, just because it was written by Rav Shimon Bar Yochai doesn't automatically get, you know, the halacha is not always like Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. Sometimes, most of the time, Yachid v'Rabim halacha k'Rabim. We have an individual versus a majority. We go with the majority. So, if the majority of the teachings in the Talmud and the Tanaim and the Amram are not quoting the halachas of the Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, even if we attribute the Zohar to Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, if they're not saying what he said, then we have to see: are we really going to rule according to him? And the Chacham Tzvi, source number 5, Simin Lamed Vav, says a similar thing. He says that I want to just tell you, Tzarach Ani Lahodia Lishol, to ask, Shafilu Mayu Advarim Divrei HaZohar Hefich Mea Poskim. Let's say it's the opposite. The Zohar says the opposite from our Poskim. We need to, he says, do we need to Lahaniach Divrei HaPoskim B'Shvil Dvarim HaAmurim B'Sisrei Torah? Should we just cast everything aside? Well, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai says this, so everybody else, we're just going to throw aside. Should we do that? Ki ein lanu b'dinim v'oraz izik b'nistaros. This is a line that Rav Wiederblank says to me all the time. I asked him, what's pshat in the fact that we wash our hands in the morning, right? We wash in Tehillas Yadayim. Because, why? You guys know, the Ruach Ra, there's different, the Ruach Ra, the evil spirits, remain in our hands. But everything else in our body leaves. So I asked Rabbi Wiederblank, I said, I don't understand. Why? Why does it stay in our hands? Why don't we have to wash our legs or our feet or our body, whatever? What is it? He's like, Ain, this is the line he said to me. Ain Asik Benistaros. We don't get involved with these hidden things. In other words, we might know that we do it, but this is not our general, and this is his Mesorah from Rabbi Willig. This is not our thing that we are involved in as much.
Judaism all about questioning? Like, if you don't understand something, or if something doesn't make sense,
you shouldn't get one answer. No, for sure. I think what he means to say, and again, this is what the Chacham Tzvi is saying, is that the halacha stands on its own. And if you're involved in, like we saw, the study of Kabbalah, and you're Mole Kreso, and you are consciously now learning Kabbalah, then fine, that's something else. But just to, you know, just to kind of haphazardly, you know, why is it in the hands? You're not going to really get it until you immerse yourself in that study. And that's not that is not the general normative way of studying halacha, and that's what he's saying to me. It's a good point, though. Ivy, you're making a good point. Meaning, why don't you just find out the reason? But the answer is, this is the mysterious element when it comes to Kabbalah, that it's not necessarily a simple answer. You can't just, it's not just like, look up what the Mishnah Berurah says. Like, why? Why does it stay in the hands? Oh, it's because of this. It's a whole system of thought. It's a whole system of thought that you can't just get in a second. So, Ein Lanu Esek Binistaros. And he says, if there's a Machlokas HaPoskim, he says, Oz Nachol Nismuch Ahachras HaZor. If we have a debate in the authorities, like you have the Magen Avraham on one hand, and we have the Levushi Srat on the other hand, different posts, and we don't know who to go with. We have the, you know, Rabbi Akiva Eger, and then we also have the, you know, who's on the level of Rabbi Akiva Eger is a huge poser. The Shach on the other hand, who do we go with? Okay, then we could use the Zohar saying one way to tip the scale, so to speak.
Is it saying that they didn't have access to the Zohar?
No, they did.
If they did, then how can the Zohar tip the scales? If they knew about it, then...
Okay, so this is a general question of Psak, that how do you just add up opinions and say, well, we have two on one side and one on the other, so we'll go with the two. That's a good question. But in general, there are many poskim who do this. Rav Avadia does this all the time. He goes with Rov poskim. So what the Chacham Tzvi is saying is that we can tip the scale. Again, you could argue on this general calculation in terms of Psak, but we can tip the scale if the Zohar fits with one of the poskim in terms of the general ruling. But we can't just go against everybody else that has been before, that they said it's Usher, oh, the Zohar says it's Mutter, or everyone said it's Mutter, the Zohar says Usher, we're now going to go and we're going to throw everything away. Now, we're going to see more tomorrow night that the Magen Avraham has three principles in how we work the Zohar into Halacha, and at times when it's a Chumrah, then we say, okay, fine, you want to be Machmir, you can be Machmir. So just to go over what we said, we're going to dive in Marv in a second. We went over the questions about the Zohar's appearance. How does it work in Halacha? We saw those that question its authenticity, and we said that the majority of Judaism, the mainstream Judaism, has accepted it along with the Gra, and to challenge it has really been historically, has not been positive. And we're going to deal with more tomorrow, the Halachos of how we balance what we see from the coming from Kabbalah and Poskim and general systematic Halacha. Shkoyach, guys.
Thank you.
To return the sources, because we're going to do more tomorrow, okay? Still recording. Thank you. Shkoyach, guys.